Good to see everybody. Of course, last night we had a little bit different program because we were interacting with a lot of young people from New Orleans and trying to help them in Krishna consciousness. So we've sort of broadcasted it, but tonight we're going to continue with our regular
program.
Do a thing, and we're going to chant. Let's see, what are we going to chant?
I'm going to get my songbook.
Okay, we're back in New Goloka, as you could probably tell, or back at my home in New Goloka. And let's see, what are we going to chant tonight? Okay, this is one of my favorites. They're all my favorites. And we're going to chant the Sri Radhika Stava. Just came back from New Orleans and New Taliban, where we had a very nice time. That's part of my GBC zone. I'm visiting. Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Jaya. His divine grace. Abhaya Chandana Vakravadana Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Anandakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Prem Sekaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shivaita Gadadha Shivasthi Gaura Vakta Vrindikitai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopatna Sayama Kunda Giddi Govardhan Kijai Vrindavaram Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadatha Sami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Lassi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindikijai Gaur Premananda Haribol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorancia. Okay. So we'll go on with the reading of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So as I mentioned before, last night we were doing basically an interaction with some young people in our farm community in New Taliban, some new people coming to Krishna consciousness. And tonight we are continuing with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, beginning with chapter 19, text 130, and chapter 19 is about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay. So, Omagana Timirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Miritam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, here we go. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. All right. Asta Parahara Krishna Bhajana Charidanda Shayane Nama Sankirtane De Seha Naikona Dine. They engage almost 24 hours daily in rendering service to the Lord. They usually sleep only an hour and a half, and some days when they continuously chant the Lord's holy name, they do not sleep. But of course, this is in reference to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Nijahara Vahara. They are giving up eating and sleeping. Why? Not that they're averse to eating and sleeping, but because they're enjoying so much. Like when you're having a good time and you're really happy, you can't sleep. And you forget about eating. So that's Krishna Bhakti Ras. The rasa, or the taste one gets from serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that one just becomes so happy that, you know, sleeping becomes, like Prabhupada, we often talk about, sleeping is ignorance. Yep. Because it means forgetfulness of Krishna. So, of course, one has to be balanced in Krishna consciousness. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan had or have spiritual bodies that didn't have the same requirements that our bodies have. So one has to be practical, because if you try to get too little sleep or too little food or too or serious sleep on the floor, you will get sick, your mind will get disturbed, and your devotional service will get impeded. The whole idea is to maximize your devotional service so you have a clear mind, a sharp mind. Kabu Bhakti Rasa Shastra Kariye Likana Chaitanya Kata Shune Kari Chaitanya Chintana. Sometimes they write transcendental literatures about devotional service, and sometimes they hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spend their time thinking about the Lord. So generally, when they were talking about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hearing about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they would hear from Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami spent more time with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he had more stories to tell about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Up until the very end, he was with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So every day, the devotees made him recite the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was there. The other Goswamis were there, and they were absorbing the nectarian pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Raghunath Das Goswami, after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed away, Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to jump off Govardhan Hill and leave this world, because he was feeling intense separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. However, the other Goswamis persuaded him not to, and the way they persuaded him not to was by telling him, it's your duty to tell us about Lord Chaitanya. So every day they engaged him in Chaitanya Kata. Egadashuni Mahantera Mahasukahaya Chaitanya Rakripa Yandre Tanehi Vismaya. When the personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear of the activities of Rupa and Sanatana and Goswamis, they would say, what is wonderful for a person who has been granted the Lord's mercy? So Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had no fixed residence. They stayed beneath the tree for one day and wrote huge volumes of transcendental literature. They not only wrote books, but chanted, danced, discussed Krishna, remembered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Thus, they executed devotional service. So as I mentioned before in a previous class, when you say that they stayed under a different tree every day, those trees were desire trees. They weren't ordinary oaks or things like that. They were desire trees. In Vrindavan, they're prakrita sahajas. Prakrita means material, and sahaja means someone who takes it very cheaply. So you put them together. someone who takes very spiritual life very cheaply because they're materially engrossed and they're projecting their material conceptions upon the absolute. So these Prakriti Sahajas say that writing books or even touching books is taboo. For them, devotional service means being relieved from these activities. Whenever they're asked to hear a recitation of Vedic literature, they refuse, saying, "What business do we have reading or hearing transcendental literatures? They're meant for neophytes." They pose themselves as too elevated to exert energy for reading, writing, and hearing. However, pure devotees under the guidance of Srila Rupa Goswami reject this sahaja or cheap philosophy. It is certainly not good to write literature for money or reputation, but to write books and publish them for the enlightenment of the general populace is real service to the Lord. That was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's opinion, and he specifically told his disciples to write books. And actually, not only tell his disciples to write books, but he told his disciples, when Prabhupada was present, that if he could sell the marble from the temples to print books, he would do it. That's how determined he was. He actually preferred to publish books rather than establish temples. Temple construction is meant for the general populace and nearby devotees. But the business of advanced and empowered devotees is to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. However, Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami did build temples by employing the donations or the help of those who came to them. I mean, they didn't over-endeavor to build temples, but people came to them, or Madan Mohan Vigraha, in the case of Sanatana Goswami, arranged for his own temple and his own prasada, boga, and everything like that. So that's a different case. And also, Srila Prabhupada spent a lot of energy to establishing temples. Why? For the devotees and to attract people to Krishna consciousness, not for himself. An actual sannyasi, he can just go anywhere because Krishna is in his heart. Like one time, Prabhupada was asked the question, sannyasi asked the question, "Should I have deities and travel with deities as I travel?" And Prabhupada said, "No, his books are the deities." Of course, that was a specific instruction for that particular sannyasi. But the point is, when traveling and preaching, one maximizes the traveling and preaching and minimizes things like the deity worship. But the deity worship, of course, is meant to attract people to Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada never minimized deity worship per se. He established deities. In fact, sometimes he would go to different places and bring the deities with him in the plane. We'd have his servant hold Radha and Krishna on the airplane seats. Especially, I think that happened in Australia. And because Prabhupada wanted to bring people to Krishna consciousness, not for his own benefit, because Prabhupada himself was absorbed internally in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but for the benefit of others. So a devotee, and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan certainly did that same thing. So a devotee is compassionate. He is Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha, and he'll do whatever is necessary for others' benefit. According to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, distributing literature is like playing on a great mridanga. He called that the Brihat Mridanga, which means great mridanga. Consequently, we always request members of the Krishna International Society for Krishna Consciousness to publish as many books as possible and distribute them widely throughout the world. By thus following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, one can become a Rupanuga devotee. Rupanuga devotee means a follower of Rupa Goswami. Chaitanya Kripa Rupa Nikiya Chena Aprane Samrita Sindhu Grantera Mangala Chatane. Srila Rupa Goswami has personally spoken about the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his auspicious introduction to his book, Bhakti Ratsamrita Sindhu 112. Vridiyasya Prayuranaya Pravartitoham Varakarupopi Tasya Hare Padakamalam Bande Chaitanya Devasya. Although I am the lowest of men and have no knowledge, the inspiration to write transcendental literatures about devotional service has been mercifully bestowed upon me. Therefore, I am offering my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me the chance to write these books. That's the humility of Srila Rupa Goswami. And Srila Rupa Goswami was so highly educated, knowing many different languages, knowing all the shastras, Nana Shastra, Vichara, and I can even know. So it's not that he didn't have even external opulences that we would be very much admiring nowadays. He had all the external opulences. He had money before he took sannyas. He had attractive features, like eyes like lotus petals. He had intelligence, and he had good birth, actually, even though he was working for the Nawab Hussein Shah, and therefore it was considered that he had lost his caste. He still came from a Saraswata Brahmin family, a high-class Brahmin family. For 10 days, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Prayag and instructed Rupa Goswami, empowering him with the necessary potency. Just in 10 days, that's it. 10 days of instruction. And how many days do we have? More than 50 years. 50 years each year is 365 days, and 366 on leap year or leap month or something. Not leap month, sorry about that. 300, yeah, through leap year, 366 on leap year. And if we multiply, let's say 365 times 50, that's a lot of days. And Rupa Goswami understood it, no, in 10 days, and Arjuna in about 40 minutes. This is a confirmation of the statement, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tari Pravartana. Unless one is specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot spread the Krishna consciousness movement. An empowered devotee sees and feels himself to be the lowest of men, for he knows that whatever he does is due to the inspiration given by the Lord in the heart. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 10:10. This is one of the nutshell verses, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam vadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To be empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to qualify himself. This means that one must engage 24 hours daily in the loving service of the Lord. The material position of a devotee doesn't matter because devotional service is not dependent on material considerations. In other words, if someone's educated, not educated, if someone's rich, not rich, if someone's healthy, if someone's sick, old or young, it doesn't matter. In his earlier life, Srila Rupa Goswami was a government officer and a grahastha. He was not even a brahmacharya sannyasi. His association with malachas and yavanas, that means people who are not in the Vedic culture and people who eat meat, but because he was always eager to serve, he was a qualified recipient for the Lord's mercy. A sincere devotee can therefore be empowered by the Lord regardless of the situation. No prerequisites. No prerequisites at all. It's not that you have to have good karma. It's not that you have many births. It's not that you have to be very intelligent. You simply have to give your heart to Krishna. In the preceding verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has described how he was personally empowered by the Lord. He further states in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, and words is a liberated person, even in the material world, although he may be engaged in so many or so-called material activities. To keep oneself free from material contamination and attain the Lord's favor, one must be sincerely eager to render service to the Lord. This is the only qualification necessary. As soon as one is favored by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Lord, one is immediately given all the power necessary to write books and propagate the Krishna conscious movement without being hampered by material considerations. Wow. I wish I was sincere. Prabhu kahe shuna rupa bhakti urasera lakshana sutra rupe kahi vistara nayaya varnana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my dear Rupa, please listen to me. It is not possible to describe devotional service completely. Therefore, I am just trying to give you a synopsis, that means a summary, of the symptoms of devotional service. Ra para shunya kabira vatira sindhu tamaya chahaiti tara kahi eka bindu. The ocean of the transcendental mellows of devotional service is so big that no one can estimate its length and breadth. However, just to help you taste it, I am describing but one drop. Wow. Eta brahmananda bari ananta jiva gana churashi laksha yunite karaye brahmana. In this universe, there are limitless living entities in 8,400,000 species, and all are wandering within this universe. That's a fact. Wandering means we're going from one body to another, and one planet to another, one species to another, one gender to another, one universe to another. This is a challenge to so-called scientists and philosophers who presume that there are living entities on this planet only. So-called scientists are going to the moon and they say there is no life there. This does not tally with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's version. He says that everywhere within this universe, there are unlimited numbers of living entities in 8,400,000 different forms. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.24, we find that living entities are sarva tatha, which means that they can go anywhere. This indicates that there are living entities everywhere. They exist on land and water and air and fire and ether. Thus, there are living entities in all types of material elements. Now, someone may say, how is that possible? Well, living entities have different types of bodies. For example, I'll give you one example, even on the Earth planet. Scientists, they went down deep into the ocean where there is these vents. Vents means like the super heated water coming out of the ocean floor, the thermal vents. And superheated means more than boiling temperature. And the pressure down there, well, it's inconceivable. Like every time you go down, I believe it's 30 feet, if I remember my scuba diving days, then the pressure doubles from 15 pounds per square foot to 30 pounds, and 30 pounds to 60 pounds. Woo! So when you go down a mile or two down, I mean, I'm not going to even calculate how much pressure. So you're thinking, who could live down there? And especially in the superheated water. But they discovered entities in superheated water. And whew, amazing that there's entities everywhere. Everywhere. The ice in the Antarctica or the Arctic, they discover living entities who sometimes they're frozen for thousands of years. Like these little tiny bears. Bears, you know, real microscopic bears. Anyway, that are there. So the living entities don't have bodies like us. They may be composed of different substances. You know, different substances means a different mixture of the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. But, or they may not be based on carbon compounds, and there may be silicon-based living entities, there may be hydrogen-based living entities, there may be subtle living entities who only have a subtle body, you know, mind, intelligence, and false ego. But we are projecting and thinking that all living entities have bodies like ours, and cells like us, and you know, things are just like us. It's not like that. There's different atmospheres on different planets, and living entities are adapted to those different atmospheres. Just like you see on the Earth planet, you know, people live in different parts of the world. Their bodies or the people are adapted more to those different parts of the world. You know, people who are in the warmer climates tend to have darker skin. People who are originally from the colder climates tend to have lighter skin. And when you move from one climate to another, you move a light-skinned person to a warmer climate, then they get cancer. of the skin. So, you know, just like that's a simple example, maybe not as radical as other living entities living on other planets, but it's a simple example of how living entities are adapted to different environments. That's really important. Or, for example, you know, sometimes living entities, human beings who live in the jungle, they develop, they have more of an ability to run fast. Why do they have the ability to run fast? Because you got to run away from different living entities like tigers and lions and elephants and stuff like that. So when they enter the different races, like the marathon races, they tend to win. So there's different bodies in different situations. Okay, since the entire material universe is composed of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, why should there be living entities on one planet and not on another? Such a foolish version can never be accepted by Vedic students. From the Vedic literatures, we understand that there are living entities on each and every planet, regardless of whether the planet is composed of earth, water, fire, or air, or combination. These living entities may not have the same forms that are found on this planet, exactly what I just said, but they have different forms composed of different elements. Even on this earth, we can see that forms of land animals are different from the forms of aquatics, that means water animals. According to the circumstance, living conditions differ, but undoubtedly there are living entities everywhere. Why should we deny the existence of living entities on this or that planet? We may not see them, because they may be too subtle. Those who have claimed to have gone to the moon have not gone there, or else with their imperfect vision, they cannot actually perceive the particular type of living entities there. So probably the same two things. You know, even if they went there, they couldn't perceive the living entity there because they'd be far more subtle. Obviously, they're not oxygen breathing like living entities on this planet. But ain't no oxygen there. So a different type of living entity. Living, you know, just like even, all right, let me give an example. Even on this planet, you have ghosts and you can't see them. I mean, I could see them, but you can't. It's like I just came from New Orleans, and because of so many people taking intoxication, not in the temple, but so many people taking intoxication in a place called the French Quarter, it's filled with ghosts because the ghosts like to take over people who take intoxication. They love it. So in this way, you can't see them, but they're there. Subtle living entities. Anyway, so there's a lot going on that you don't see. You don't see in the microscopic realm. You don't see in the macroscopic realm. You don't see beyond the spectra that we're able to see with our eyes. You can't hear beyond certain vibrations. For example, a dog can hear things that we can't hear. He can hear higher vibrations, sound vibrations, frequencies, that is, than we can hear. So there's a lot happening. Our limited perception, even materially speaking, is extremely limited, and we try to expand it utilizing scientific instruments, but still it's extremely limited. Very, very, very limited. There's a hell of a lot going on that we cannot be and are not aware of. Living entities are described as ananta or unlimited. Nevertheless, they are said to belong to 8,400,000 species, as stated in the Vishnu Purana. Jalaja navalakshani stavara laksha vimshati primayodruja sangyaya pakshinam dasha lakshanam Trimsha Lakshani Pashava Chatur Lakshani Manushaha. There are 900,000 species living in the water. There are also 2 million non-moving living entities, stavara, such as trees and plants. There are also 1,100,000 species of insects and reptiles, and there are 1 million species of birds. As far as the quadrupeds, that means four legs, there are 3 million varieties. Oh, my God. And there are 400,000 human species. Some of these species may exist on one planet and not on another. But in any case, within all the planets of the universe and even in the sun, there are living entities. This is the verdict of the Vedic literatures, as the Bhagavad Gita 2:20 confirms. Najayate mriyate vakata chinnayam bhutva bhavita bhavana bhuyaha jona chishtashita yam paranu nahanyate hanumane shure. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death. At any time, he has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He's unborn, eternal, ever existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. That's a really important verse, because sometimes people say the soul was created at a certain time, or the soul popped out of the Mahavishnu, or the soul, of course, the soul does come out of the Mahavishnu, but he's not created by the Mahavishnu. It's a little bit different. Or the soul is created by the Tathastha, whatever that is. So, Bhagavad Gita tells us the soul is never born, never dies, eternal, primeval, not slain when the body is slain. Since the living entities are never annihilated, they simply transmigrate from one life form to another. Thus, there is an evolution of forms according to the degree of developed consciousness. One experiences different degrees of consciousness in different forms. A dog's consciousness is different from a man's. Even within a species, we find that a father's consciousness is different from his son's, and that a child's consciousness is different from a youth's. Just as we find different forms, we find different states of consciousness. When we see different states of consciousness, we may take it for granted that the bodies are different. In other words, different types of bodies depend on different states of consciousness. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Very important verse. Yam yam, 8:6. Yam yam bhavi smaran bhavam yajati ante kalevaram tang tam evaiti kontiya sarata bhava bhavataha. One's consciousness at the time of death determines one's type of body in the next life. This is the process of transmigration of the soul. A variety of bodies is already there. We change from one body to another in terms of our consciousness. And as I mentioned the other day, you cannot just switch your consciousness at the time of death. You know, your whole life, you're just a rascal. And then all of a sudden, oh, it's time to die. Time to be Krishna conscious. Okay. Switch. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Bol, back to God. No way, Jose. Because what the way you'll think at the time of death is what you've been cultivating all along. Let me give you an example. Like when you go to sleep at night, you dream. You don't have any control, usually, unless you're a yogi, of your dreams. And because you don't have any control of your dreams, you're going to more or less dream in a way that's indicative of your state of consciousness. Oh my God. What did you dream about last night? Think about it. What did you dream about? Did you dream about politics? Did you dream about money? Did you dream about, let's see, the test that you have at school? Did you dream about someone you didn't like? Or did you dream about someone you did like? Did you dream about your favorite movie star? Did you dream about Donald Trump? I mean, who did you dream about? Anyway, so that's really indicative of your consciousness. It's like we cannot control what we dream about. We can control by cultivation during the day, during our normal life. But you cannot just switch at the time of death and be a rascal your whole life. People think like that. Keshagra satika bhagapuna shatam shakari tara sama sukshma jivera swarupa vichari. Someone said he dreamt he was reading Krishna book to the kids. Well, that's pretty cool. I dreamt I was driving my car last night. The length and breadth of the living entity is described as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. This is the original subtle nature of the living entity. Let me describe what that is. Oh, here's the verse anyway. Keshagara satabhaksha satangcha sadashatmakaha jiva shukshma sarupoyam sankhyatito hi chitkanaha. If we divide the tip of a hair into 100 parts, and then take one of these parts and divide it again to 100 parts. That very fine division is the size of but one of the numberless living entities. They are all chitkana, particles of spirit, not matter. So it's interesting. So when we talk about the tip of the hair, someone else dreamt that they were with two sannyasis and nice kirtan. Anyway, that's, you're all good devotees. I dream that I'm fighting Ravana. So anyway, so let's talk about the size of the soul. Okay. Tip of the hair. Anyone here a mathematical? I'm sure some of you were trained in mathematics. Tip of the hair, if you do cross sections and you go to actual the tip of the hair, that is a point in space. A point has no material dimensions. Wow. Yes, the tip of the hair. Because when you're talking about a tip, let's say, tip of something, if you've ever studied at the university, you know, as you keep doing cross sections, you get to the very tip of anything, basically, and you get to a point in space that has no length or breadth or depth. So the soul has no material dimensions. This verse is quoted from the commentary in the portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein the Vedas personified offer their obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna confirms this statement in the Bhagavad Gita 15.7, Mame Vangsha Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanata. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Lord Krishna, Sri Krishna personally identifies himself with the minute living entities. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Spirit, the Super Soul, and the living entities are his very minute parts and parcels. Of course, we cannot divide the tip of a hair into such fine particles, but spiritually, such small particles can exist spiritually. Spiritual strength is so powerful that a mere atomic portion of spirit can be the biggest brain in the material world. The same spiritual spark is within an ant and within the body of Brahma. According to his karma, material activities, the spiritual spark attains a certain type of body. Material activities are carried out in goodness, passion, and ignorance, or a combination of these. According to the mixture of the modes of material nature, the living entity is awarded a particular type of body. This is the conclusion. So here, we get a particular type of body because of our desire and because of our karma. And that body is obtained because our desire is manifest in our subtle body, which carries us to the next gross body, or water, fire, air, ether body. Just like Krishna gives the example in the Gita, just like the air carries aromas. The air doesn't mix with the aroma, but it carries the aroma. Balagra shatabhagasya shatada kapitasya cha bhago jiva savijya iti cha parashutihi. If we divide the tip of the hair into 100 parts and then take one part and divide this into another 100 parts, that 10,000 part is the dimension of the living entity. This is the verdict of the chief Vedic mantras. The first three padas of this verse from the Pancha Doshi Chaturdipa, 81, are taken from the Shveta Shvatara Upanishad 5.9. Shukshmanam apyaham jiva. Lord Krishna says, amongst minute particles, I am the living entity. Living entity is one with and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As spirit soul, the living entity is one in quality with the Supreme Lord. However, the Supreme Lord is bigger than the biggest, and the living entity is smaller than the smallest. Smallest of the small, sorry. This quotation is the third pada of a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.16.11. Aparimta durvastano pratao yari sarvagatas tarhinas vashete te niyamo druva nitaratha ajani jayan mayam tari vimucha nirandrir bhavet samam anujana tam yad amatam mata dushtatiya. O Lord, although the living entities who have accepted material bodies are spiritual and unlimited in number, if they were all pervading, there would be no question of their being under your control. If they're accepted, however, as particles of the eternally existing spiritual entity, as part of you, or the Supreme Spirit soul whole, we must conclude that they are always under your control. If the living entities are simply satisfied with being identical with you as spiritual particles, then they will be happy being controllers of so many things. The conclusion that the living entities and the Supreme Personality of God are one and the same is a faulty conclusion. It is not a fact. So, of course, we understand, due to Lord Chaitanya's teaching, the Chinja Veda Veda Tattva philosophy, we are one with the Lord in nature, but we are not with the one with the Lord in, I know we're talking about quantity, but I'm thinking of a different word. In potency, like the extent of the potency. So, in other words, we have the same nature as that of the Lord, but it's very limited, and the Lord's nature is unlimited. So that's even a better way to explain it. This verse, which is also from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87:30, was spoken by the personified Vedas. Taramadje stabara jangama dvi veda jangame tiryakjala salachara viveda. The unlimited living entities can be divided into two divisions, those that move and those that cannot move. Among living entities that can move, there are birds, aquatics, and animals. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving clear instructions on how the living entities live under different conditions. There are trees, plants, and stones that cannot move, or they move very slowly. But still, they must be considered living entities or spiritual sparks. The soul is present in bodies like those of the trees, plants, and stones. And Prabhupada talks about how there were scientific studies done on plants. They would actually have some sort of electrochemical response if someone was going to cut them down or someone was cruel. They're all living entities. And even according to quantum mechanics, the atom is actually influenced by consciousness. Not just the atom, but the particles, like the electron, proton, neutron, and muon, and all the other living entities or things in the atom. Among moving living entities, such as birds, aquatics, and animals, the same spiritual spark is there, as stated herein. There are living entities that can fly, swim, and walk. We must also conclude that there are living entities that can move within fire and ether. And we've seen that within fire and ether. Living entities have different material bodies composed of earth, water, air, fire, and ether. The words Tatamajay means within this universe, the entire material universe is composed of five material elements. It is not true that living entities reside only within this planet, not within others. Such a conclusion is completely contradictory to the Vedas, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 224. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can neither be burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present, everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. The soul has nothing to do with the material elements. Any material element can be cut to pieces, especially earth. As far as the living entity is concerned, however, he can be neither burned nor cut to pieces. He can therefore live within fire. We can conclude that there are also living entities within the sun. Why should living entities be denied this planet or that planet? According to the Vedas, living entities can live anywhere and everywhere on land and water, in the air, or in fire. Whatever the condition, the living entity is unchangeable, stanu. From the statements of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Bhagavad Gita, we are to conclude that living entities exist everywhere throughout the universes. They are distributed as trees, plants, aquatics, birds, human beings, and so on. So we went to text from 130 to 144 today. Okay, we're going to stop sharing. And then we are going to allow you to ask questions. Give me a second. I have to allow you to ask questions. You are now technically allowed to ask questions. Let me just put this chat window a little smaller so I can see. accelerate, or raise your hand, or what else can you do? Or unmute yourself. Okay, so who wants to ask a question? Now is your opportunity. Raise your hand, type in the chat window, or unmute yourself, or we will end early. No one.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Hare Bol, Shambhapriya.
Humble obeisances, Hare Bol.
All glories, Prabhu. So what, you have a question?
I do. It's about the soul. We were discussing the soul. We know that the mind, intelligence, and the ego has subtle body, right? But does the soul itself have intelligence and feelings separately?
Yes, there's a spiritual mind, which is non-different from the soul. There's a spiritual intelligence, which is not different from the soul. And there are feelings, which are non-different from the soul. In the material world, there's the duality. Duality means our mind is different from us. Our intelligence is different from us. Our false ego is different from us. Our earth is different from us. Our water, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, they're all different from us. That's duality. In the spiritual world, these are all qualities of the soul, which are not different from the soul.
Okay.
So they're actually eternal qualities, whereas the qualities the soul manifests in the material world are changeable. They're not eternal qualities. In other words, the material mind can morph. I was just reading about a man who was actually a very nice man, and then he became a demon. And not from Shastra. I was reading about one of the previous leaders of the country of Bosnia, who was actually a very nice man, a lawyer and everything like that, got educated in the United States. And then by bad association, his mind changed. So you actually see the people's mind change. Sometimes they can be really nice. Sometimes they can be bad and they become good. Like, for example, Valmiki, you know, he was very bad. As Ratnagara, he was a demon. And then by the association, by the chanting, he actually became good. So the mind can be transformed. The material mind can be transformed. The ego can be transformed. The intelligence can be transformed. Krishna says, Mata Smritir Gyanam Aponam. So I give people intelligence. So that it changes. But in the spiritual realm, as soon as we uncover the soul, there's no difference between the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence, and the spiritual feelings.
Just to follow on from there, we have the material mind, intelligence, ego. Does the soul simultaneously feel emotions and think spiritually as well? Does it like simultaneously function within us? Do they?
If you're actually a little bit advanced in devotional service, but otherwise we identify with the material. If you're completely immersed in the material energy, you're identifying with the feelings of the material world, and you're actually because you're right, false identification. I mean, just like if one's watching a movie and someone is crying in the movie and you identify with them in the movie, then you actually identify with that emotion. But it's not your emotion. You identify with someone else's emotion.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, here's a question. Actually, two questions. So in our conditioned state, how are these spiritual qualities of soul uncovered? Or are they asleep? We chant Hare Krishna and we become more and more aware. It's not an all or nothing thing. As we advance spiritually, then the qualities of the soul become manifest and then we obtain good qualities. That's why Krishna says, or the Bhagavatam says, Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavad Bhakti Kinchana Savagunas Tetra Samasute Sava Harab Bhaktasha Puto Mahaguna Mano retainasati tavato, but he, one who's actually a devotee, all good qualities manifest. Hare Krishna Gurudev. Okay, my husband always questions me, being educated, why am I listening to someone? I missed that. Hold on, so I got a page down again. Why I'm listening to someone and chanting certain rounds. Because of my chanting, he is becoming more atheistic. He probably sounds like Hiranyakashipu to me. He can't listen to kirtan if I play on the phone. How do I answer him? I can't chant real low because I have to hear my voice. Ooh. Namaste Narasimhaya Palladaladadayane Hiranyakashipu Vachaha Shilatam Kanakalaye. Anyway, so that's actually a good question. He prays to all the gods and can't listen to Kirtan. Actually, Krishna says in the Gita, O Rishikesh, the whole world becomes joyful hearing your name, but the demons become afraid and they flee here and there. I think you have to figure out a way to chant when he's not around. Oh my God. Yes, actually, sometimes when one chants in front of people, it just upsets them. Someone who's not Krishna conscious. That is true. I would say, first of all, give him a lot of prasadam. Be nice to him, cook a lot, be a perfect wife, and eventually he'll come around. Actually, if you feed someone, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, not through his ears. Men have this thing called an ego, so do women. And upadesho himorkanam prakopaya nashantaye. You can ask someone to translate. I'll translate it. If you give a fool good instruction, it just makes him angry. So therefore, the best thing is try not to aggravate him. And if you can chant real softly, you say you can't. As far as kirtan, just play kirtan in your phone with your headphones. Get yourself some Bluetooth headphones and listen to the kirtan and just go around. Don't disturb them. You know, we don't want to disturb people, but encourage people to work in a spirit of devotion. And you have to learn how to chant really softly somehow or other. He complains that I am giving food to Krishna first. Sorry about that. Oh my God. Giving food to Krishna. Then you may have to do your offerings in your mind. Wow, that's a tough situation. I mean, if you could. Sounds like Mirabai. Sounds like Mirabai's situation. Mirabai's husband actually broke her deities. He smashed her deity of Krishna. And the deity actually magically came back together again. So it's an amazing story. Therefore, you may have to do your devotional service in your heart. You know, sometimes we can just, in a difficult situation, we just like meditate on it, forces us to go really internal. And so, I mean, like, for example, many years ago, when my family was still alive, I'd visit my family. And obviously, you know, when they made vegetarian food, my mother would make vegetarian food for me. I couldn't, like, bow down Mr. Hare Krishna Hare Ram. I had to make the offering in my mind. I said, Krishna, please accept. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. So sometimes we have to be just like a little circumspect so people don't get upset. Prabhupada said, actually, this is interesting, to Raghunath Das Goswami, who's always trying to run away from home, just act like a perfect businessman, a perfect son, and this way they won't suspect anything. So you're going to have to learn, this is your challenge in life, learn how to balance your internal life, your spiritual life, with what's happening externally. And if you do it the right way, that will push you to go more internal, which is actually beneficial. Sometimes if we're in a very difficult situation, you know, it actually makes us more Krishna conscious because, you know, people are opposition. I mean, for example, let's say if you were in Russia during the communist years, of course, they're all communists now, but when they were against Krishna consciousness, the devotees were really like attentive to their chanting and everything like that. And they actually read better. It's described that whenever a devotee had a book, Srila Prabhupada's books, they would copy it in like in a Xerox machine or whatever machines they had. Or each copy would be read like by each devotee very intently because it was against the law. and they get in trouble. So they were actually more intent or more attentive in their devotional service. So you, it's actually an extremely favorable situation to becoming Krishna conscious, because it really forces one to take Krishna consciousness seriously and not become complacent. So that's my understanding. And I see that with the devotees in Russia, when Russia wasn't favorable, it just, you know, they became very serious about Krishna consciousness. So I would take it in a way that Krishna has actually put you in that situation to actually learn how to focus. And we had a suggestion, you know, go on long walks if the husband is not favorable. The husband was like, where are you going? I'm going to worship the demigods. I'm going to get away from you. Anyway, so the main thing is, when we have ourselves in a situation where it's even dangerous to be Krishna conscious, that really helps us focus more. Like opposition sometimes helps a devotee become more determined. So take it like that. Take it like it's Krishna's test, and Krishna's arranged the situation to help you focus more in Krishna consciousness. All right, that sounds good. So any other quick questions? If not, we will end. Oh, Sumukha.
Gurudev, please ask me.
How do you go?
Hare Krishna. I have this question. I'm learning this Bhagavata Shloka 647, Yoginam Api Sarvesham. And in the translation, Krishna says in the end, that of all yogis, one who is great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Then in the end, he says, that is my opinion. Why my opinion? I don't understand.
Why, because it's Krishna's opinion is absolute. That's called epistemology. How do we know what we know? Mm-hmm. So we know what we know because of the descending process. Krishna is actually directly saying, mm-hmm, I am God, and this is my opinion, therefore, it's absolute. Mm-hmm. He's not saying, this is just like someone else's opinion. He said, this is my opinion. So he's stressing, it actually just stresses his own statements. If he just said it without saying, it's my opinion, then there'd be less stress on it. But because Krishna is directly saying that is an absolute fact, it's like Krishna saying it's, that is my opinion, is like saying that's an absolute fact. Okay.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Okay, so we are going to end now. Oh, someone's phone is going off. I muted him. So we're going to end now. We'll see everyone tomorrow night, same time, same station. All glorious to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.